Welcome and thank you for standing by. All guests will be in a listen-only mode for the duration of today's conference until the end of the presentation, which then we will hold the Q&A session. At that time, if you'd like to ask a question, you may press star then one. This conference is now being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Kathy Harbin. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Karen, and thank you all for joining us today for the release of a new CDC Vital Signs. We are joined by the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Tom Frieden. We also have Dr. Jeffrey Kelman. He's chief medical officer at the CMS Center for Medicare. They will have brief remarks, and then we'll open it up for questions.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us today. As you know, CDC works 24/7 to protect the health, safety, and security of Americans, and every month we issue a Vital Signs that focuses on one of the key issues affecting the health in this country. This one is particularly important, and unfortunately, hypertension is known as the silent killer, and all too often, problems with hypertension are silent in the media as well. But the fact is that high blood pressure is a leading cause of death in the U.S., and it is very poorly treated. Every year, more than 1.5 million Americans have a heart attack or stroke, and high blood pressure is a key factor in those incidents. Uncontrolled high blood pressure may also be connected with cognitive decline and dementia later in life, as well as being the leading preventable cause of stroke. Today, 70% of people over the age of 65, and overall 75 million Americans, have high blood pressure. But about half of this group don't have it under control. And we've provided to the media what's sometimes called the cascade chart, a diagram that shows the proportion of U.S. adults who have high blood pressure. That's 75 million. Then what proportion of those are aware of it? And it turns out that about one in six people with high blood pressure are not aware of it. The next bar on that chart is the proportion who are treated, and it turns out that about one in four people with high blood pressure are not treated. And then the final bar is the proportion controlled, and again, only about half of people with high blood pressure have it controlled. The good news is that controlling blood pressure is extremely important and can be done inexpensively and effectively. In fact, treatment for high blood pressure can be done with daily medications, often combined medications if more than one is needed, that are available in low-cost formulations. Controlling blood pressure is also assisted by adopting a healthy lifestyle, including regular exercise, healthy weight, limiting alcohol use, and having a heart-healthy diet. But critically, medications will be necessary for the vast majority of people with high blood pressure, but they only work if they're taken. Working together throughout the healthcare system to improve blood pressure control nationally can make a huge difference. Everyone has a stake in this game, and the latest Vital Signs shows that everyone can do better, and doing better can save millions of lives. This report is a collaboration between CDC and CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and we've been delighted to work closely with CMS over the past few years on a series of projects, of which this is one. We looked at blood pressure medicine non-adherence among Medicare Part D enrollees age 65 and over. Medicine non-adherence refers to patients who don't take medication as prescribed. This is important because it's a growing population that's already at increased risk for heart disease and stroke, which currently kills 800,000 people in the U.S. each year, one out of every three deaths, many of them in people in the younger age groups. In analyzing the data, the researchers found that more than one in four people enrolled in Medicare Part D who were prescribed and had started blood pressure medications, about 5 million people, were not taking it as directed. That means that although they had started taking medicine, they then skipped or stopped doses in the future. Now, that's particularly troubling because other research not done in this project indicates that up to 25% of new prescriptions for blood pressure medicine are never even filled in the first place. So if you just think back to that cascade for a minute, a lot of people aren't recognized as having hypertension. Of those recognized, many are prescribed regimens which may not be strong enough. Of those prescribed those regimens, maybe a quarter don't even start them, and now we're finding that another quarter don't continue them. The result of that, the result of this silent killer, are heart attacks, strokes, kidney failure, and many other serious health problems, including, as I mentioned earlier, growing evidence of a link between uncontrolled blood pressure and dementia later in life, in addition to being the leading risk factor for stroke. The good news is that we can do something about this. Healthcare systems, doctors, nurses, pharmacists, community health workers, practices, hospitals, insurers have a key role to play to improve blood pressure control nationally. But before we talk about that, just a little bit more about the details of what the researchers did. They combed through data of almost 19 million people enrolled in Medicare Part D with either the Medicare Advantage or Medicare fee-for-service coverage during the year 2014. They also analyzed variations in non-adherence rates by geography, race, ethnicity, gender, income status, and medication class, and there were large disparities due to both race, ethnicity, and where people live. One in three Medicare Part D enrollees who were Black, Hispanic, or American Indian, Alaskan Natives were not taking their blood pressure medicine as directed, putting them at a higher risk of heart attack, stroke, kidney disease, and death. There were also striking geographic differences. What's sometimes called the stroke belt in the U.S. South also had a higher rate of non-adherence, and it's no coincidence that it's called the stroke belt and has a higher rate of non-adherence. If people in all states did as well as the three highest performing states, which were North Dakota, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, about 1.4 million more patients with Medicare Part D would be taking their blood pressure medicine as directed, and many more lives would be saved. There are many reasons people don't take blood pressure medicine as directed. These range from cost to adverse effects to complex medicine regimens. But the findings really do trouble me, both as a doctor and as the director of CDC with our mission to protect Americans. A few years ago, we looked at what would be the single intervention that would result in the largest number of lives saved in this country, and it was improving blood pressure control. So we have to address every aspect of that cascade I went through earlier, from detection to effective treatment to adherence. Today's report is focusing on adherence, and there's a lot that can be done at various points of the care continuum to improve documentation, monitoring, and support for patients to increase the likelihood that patients will begin, continue, and take medications effectively. Clinicians can check blood pressure and prescribe simple regimens, 90-day refills, combination medicines. They can follow specific protocols that make it simpler and more likely that patients will get evidence-based treatment. They can encourage the use of home blood pressure cuffs and easy-to-use tools like blood pressure logs or applications and make those readings part of the medical record. Other efforts include bringing the most effective treatment protocols into practice and involving the entire healthcare team to ensure that patients are taking their medicine appropriately. And after I'm finished, Dr. Kelman will speak some about what CMS is doing to encourage that as well. These actions are happening in some clinics and practices across the U.S. For example, one group in central Massachusetts, the Reliant Medical Group, views getting patients to take their medicines as a team effort. They increased their blood pressure control rate from around 69% to more than 80% by actively promoting blood pressure control and medication adherence during visits, by using electronic health records, by having a better understanding of the treatment available and the copays, by empowering social workers to help patients get financial support, and by involving pharmacists after patients were discharged to assist with managing complex regimens. Pharmacists have a very important role. They're trusted health advisors. They can check blood pressure at the time of prescription pickup and enroll patients in reminder programs to help them renew prescriptions on time. Insurers have incentives for simplified treatment and can remove or at least reduce copay for medicines needed for prevention of complications of chronic diseases. We have learned repeatedly in this country and everywhere in the world it's been studied that any copay will reduce medication use, even among those who don't have substantial financial constraints. So reducing and eliminating copays is a very important action. Community health workers can connect patients with local resources and help to manage blood pressure. And of course, patients, families, loved ones have a role as well to ensure that they take medications regularly and can use reminders such as weekly pill boxes or mobile apps to help stay on track. Home blood pressure cuff converts an asymptomatic condition to one that can be monitored and understood by the patient. The federal government is also doing our part, providing resources to all states to address and prevent chronic disease. That includes encouraging prescription drug plans to improve medicine use through the Medicare Star Ratings program and reducing cross-sharing in the Medicare Part D coverage gap, also known as the donut hole. One effort involves Million Hearts, a national initiative to prevent a million heart attacks and strokes over a five-year period. Million Hearts emphasizes a simple concept that public health and the healthcare system can work together to achieve change, and fittingly, it was CMS and CDC who have led that initiative through the U.S. government. In the clinical realm, we're working to accomplish this by promoting proven prevention strategies, such as standardized hypertension treatment protocols and effective use of health information technology. While there's much more to be done, we know that this effort, which now has over 100 partners in every state and many communities, has helped many Americans avoid heart attacks and strokes. Before taking questions, I'd like now to turn it over to Dr. Jeff Kelman, Chief Medical Officer and CMS Center for Medicare, for additional comments.
Thank you, Dr. Friedman. And we fully agree that in terms of the importance of adherence to blood pressure medications, if medications are not taken, they clearly cannot be effective. At CMS in the Part D program, we are addressing this issue to start with medication therapy management programs, in which hypertension is one of the core conditions. These programs start with drug reconciliation, where beneficiaries, patients, and when I was a doctor, who are asked to describe and count all the medications they take, looking for drug interactions, appropriate use, duplicate use, and adherence. These teams include physicians, nurses, and pharmacists. And direct engagement with the beneficiary is considered the hallmark of improving adherence. We're looking for and exploring enhanced MTM as a demonstration project in the Innovation Center. We also have developed quality measures for blood pressure medications that are part of our STARS value-based incentive program, the so-called 5 STARS program, which are identifiable on Plan Finder, that for anybody to see. And there's also an obvious financial incentive to plans to get full adherence in terms of the VBID program. In terms of copays, for low-income individuals who are full so-called LIS patients, the copays are very small by statute. They're around $8 for a full month of prescriptions for a brand drug and about $3 for a generic drug. For high-use individuals who have multiple medications but may not be low-income, when they reach the reinsurance level, the copays fall to 5%, and in fact, for those individuals who are LIS, there are no copays at all. And also, thanks to the Affordable Care Act, we are filling in the coverage gap, the so-called donut hole, for all beneficiaries, and it should be eliminated back to the standard design by 2020. We hope that by examining and working with the CDC on these spectrum approaches, that we'll develop best practices, and through continuous monitoring, we'll be able to improve adherence for everybody. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Jeff. And we'll now open it for questions, operator. And while you're doing that, I will ask our colleagues from the media to remember that although this doesn't always get headlines, it's crucially important. There are 5 million Americans out there who were studied in this study who were not picking up their prescriptions for antihypertensive medicines, who have high blood pressure and whose risk of having a stroke, heart attack, or kidney damage is quite substantial. There's a reason it's called the silent killer. Globally, high blood pressure kills more people than any other cause, more than 10 million people. And we're seeing that unless there's very focused attention from communities, from healthcare workers, and from patients, we are not seeing the kind of high levels of adherence that will prevent so many of those preventable heart attacks and strokes. We know it's possible, because there are parts in the U.S. that have, of the U.S., and populations and providers that have very high rates of adherence. So now, operator, over for our first question.
Thank you. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one and record your first and last name clearly when prompted. Once again, if you have any questions over the phone lines, please press star then one at this time. Our first question comes from Margarita Bimbaum from American Heart Association. News, ma'am, your line is open.
This question is for both Dr. Friedman and Dr. Kelman. Can you speak to the differences among non-Hispanic whites, non-Hispanic blacks, Asians, and Hispanics? Why are those numbers different?
Thank you. I'll start. What we saw is that there are much higher rates of non-adherence among the three groups you mentioned, American Indians, Alaska Natives as one group, Black and Hispanic Americans as a second. Still high, but lower rates of non-adherence among Asian Pacific Islanders and non-Hispanic whites. This study cannot determine in detail the reasons for those differences, but we know that there are often barriers to care, both in terms of finance and access to care. There may be multiple conditions that make it more difficult for patients to adhere. We also know in the case of African Americans that there's a higher rate of high blood pressure. So not only is there a lower level of adherence, but a higher proportion of African Americans have high blood pressure. Dr. Kelman, do you want to add anything to that?
Oh, I agree, and I think the important point is it's only by identifying disparities that it gives you the ability to develop tools to address them.
Thank you. Next question.
Our next question comes from Tom Corwin of Augusta Chronicle. Sir, your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. You mentioned the Stroke Belt, those counties across the South. They're largely rural, less affluent. And, you know, so obviously there's some factors going on there, but why is it that you think the rates of noncompliance would be, or non-adherence would be higher in the South as opposed to other regions?
It's hard to say. Although not in the report, we did not see substantial differences between urban and rural areas. We know that this correlates quite closely with stroke rates and heart disease rates. So there is a higher burden of disease in many of the communities that have a lower level of adherence. Some of that is undoubtedly barriers to care. Some of that has to do with the structure of the healthcare system and the efficacy of the healthcare system in supporting patients in those areas. I'll turn it over to Dr. Ritchie, who's the first author of the study, for additional comments.
I would completely agree with Dr. Frieden. The only thing I would add is just another call to action in this part of the country, knowing that they are typically at higher risk for having strokes and heart attacks, while medication adherence is likely a part of the story, there's lots of things going on as far as driving those disparities. But we definitely think, and this is, again, a call to action, that medication adherence is one of the focal points that health systems should really rally around and understand the profiles of their population so they can really help overcome the barriers to people taking their medications as directed.
I think it's important, and this perhaps is the bottom line for this whole release, is that everyone needs to understand how crucially important medicines to control blood pressure are. Medicines to control blood pressure can save your life. They can prevent you from having a stroke and heart attack. So it's very important that you take them, know your blood pressure, and keep it under control. Dr. Kelman, anything you'd like to add?
No, and I agree both with you and Dr. Ritchie. But I think the important idea is that knowing why something is happening is important, but it can't stop us from trying to address it without a full explanation. I mean, these kind of data tell us exactly what to focus on and make an effort, which may be different in different communities, to improve adherence.
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Dennis Thompson, so you're of Health Day. Your line is open.
I'm sorry, you question with the question.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have other questions on the line?
Thank you. Our next question comes from Leah Samuel of STAT. Your line is open.
Hello, doctors. I have a question about the study. You indicate in the study that there, in the report, that it doesn't get at a lot of the reasons for the non-compliance or for the non-adherence among certain groups. How are you able to address the, or to get better compliance if you haven't yet discovered the more specific reasons for it?
Well, as Dr. Kelman just said, we may not have a perfect understanding of the drivers of non-adherence, but we have a very strong understanding of what reverses non-adherence. So we know, for example, that healthcare systems which make it easier for patients, whether that's 90-day refills or combination medications or no barriers or phone or email consults with their clinicians, those systems get much higher rates of compliance. We also know that communities which emphasize blood pressure have seen control, have had tremendous improvements. We've been monitoring, for example, the Minneapolis-St. Paul community, which through the National Institutes of Health has had a heart monitoring survey, gold standard actual examination survey now for 35 years. When they began that, or more, when they began that survey, their rate of blood pressure control was about the same as the U.S. as a whole, but they've far outstripped it by focusing on issues of recognition of blood pressure as a problem, standardized treatment protocols, and supporting patients to improve adherence. Dr. Ritchie, would you like to add other specific things that have been shown to improve adherence in other studies?
Sure. Looking at the other studies, again, outside of our study, is to understand that, one, there's community barriers and then patient-level barriers. I think understanding what are specific to your community and what specific are to your patients if your healthcare provider is very important. So, for example, on a community and on a patient level, is understanding this link between having high blood pressure and poor health outcomes, heart attacks and strokes, because that's still sometimes something that's lost. People think it's, I have high blood pressure and that's the end of the story. But really, we need to make sure that everyone understands that high blood pressure leads to these other things that, one, cause death or a considerable disability. So I think that's one of the main messages right there. And then, as Dr. Fried mentioned, really the complexity of the prescriptions and understanding all the medication, the whole medication profile of a patient, and being able to simplify that as best we can, whether that's through more 90-day fills or synchronization of when they go to fill, so it kind of only one trip to the pharmacy kind of idea. If they're taking two medications, ideally if those two medications could be in the same pill, limiting the pill burden every day. And then I guess the other thing is this cost burden, going back to that. For certain individuals, cost is definitely a barrier to them taking their medication. So as best as we can do to address that, I think those are steps we can help.
In patients I've seen, one of the most common misconceptions is my blood pressure must be fine because I feel fine. And there's a real sense that some patients have that I can tell when my blood pressure is increased. Fortunately or unfortunately, that's not the case. Many patients have sky-high blood pressure and feel completely fine until the day they have a stroke or a heart attack. And this is one of the areas that we need to improve public education of, that the only way you can know if your blood pressure is high is to take it. And the only way most patients with high blood pressure can get that blood pressure down is to take their medicine. Jeff, do you want to add anything on adherence?
Just one thing I agree with, obviously, both of you, and that from the way we see it, there are really three parts. One is identification of the individuals who are non-adherents, as this study demonstrates. The second is a direct engagement with team-based care, and that engagement is going to change depending on the circumstance of the non-adherent individual. There is no one answer. I mean, a lot of the principles Dr. Ritchie and Dr. Frieden mentioned are applied differently to different individuals. And the last is analysis, feedback, to see if it worked, and changing the program if it didn't.
Great. And I would flag that we've had, through the Million Hearts Initiative, a recognition program for providers around the country who get to at least 70% blood pressure control among their patients. We've recognized providers from urban and rural areas, from all regions of the country, tribal, diverse race, ethnicity. So it's definitely possible, but the problem is it's not happening as often as it should. We have time for perhaps one or two other questions, if there are.
Once again, if you have any questions, please press star then one at this time. One moment, please.
Okay,
we can
wrap it up here. I would just like to thank the authors, thank CMS for their collaboration, and emphasize again the bottom line here is that there are too many Americans out there who are at great risk of heart attack and stroke because they and their healthcare providers have not established a system that ensures that they will take their medicine and reduce their risk of a heart attack and stroke. This puts their lives at risk, and the healthcare system should do more to help them stay on their medications. Heart disease and stroke are the number, really cardiovascular disease generally, is the number one killer in the U.S. among both men and women. It's also the number one cause of health inequalities. It's a problem for all Americans. It's particularly frustrating because so many of these deaths and so many of these heart attacks and strokes are preventable through managing medical conditions, particularly controlling blood pressure. So thank you very much for joining us.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. If you have follow-up questions, please call the CDC press office at 404-639-3286, or you can email us at media@cdc.gov. Thank you again for joining us. This concludes the call.